reconvene here.
Chairman, Commissioners, here for Universal Development Services, number 177. On my right, Mr. Timothy Williams, who has circulated in the evidence and will present a short response to the S43 report. And on my left, Mr. Daniel Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, who is a representative of the of Universal, and is just here to answer questions if required.
Received your submissions
yesterday. I apologise for the fact that I only was yesterday, but I was briefed a week ago and it took me a while to catch up with what was happening in this matter.
So I've certainly been through, I think my fellow commissioners have been aggressive on that. So I will say at the outset that your submissions regarding the issue of council selling it free of any obligations and then imposing obligations to the district plan, I don't think those are really matters that we can deal with. We're more interested in planning issues at this point. And I should highlight that there are actually submissions seeking alterations or others similar or more restrictive in the planning officer's office. So I don't think it's those submissions really get you very far.
I take your point, sir, but you will appreciate my client's point of view.
Yes, you will certainly.
Point of view made for a reason.
You've written it down.
for a reason. And it's my client's point of view. The council is the council. How are you looking at it? And the other, my sort of almost apology for my submission, sir, is it does contain an element of what might almost be evidence, but I haven't. Williams here to confirm, particularly the diagrams at the back, which were prepared kind of at the last minute, and I thought that would be helpful to you.
I think also I should let you know that this morning we did a site visit of both the large lot residential, as I indicated, it's Bezahammer, but also we went up to Matakari Place, Matawiki Place, and looked from the walking track across, so we do understand the lay of the land, so to speak, and what the issues are that we're dealing with on that.
Well, if you have my submissions, I just intend to take them as read and really come to discuss with somebody. I just wanted, by way of introduction, that this is a strange situation. We have, regardless of how it got here, the council having owned this block of land, having rezoned it in the notified plan as a medium density residential, then putting it on the market in the mid-2016, at a time when the only subdivision you can do is low density residential, 700 square feet lots, because that's what, as you're aware, commissioners, the new rules don't kick in until you issue decisions, and that's end of next year.
Council issues its decisions.
Yeah, council issues decisions, yes. So, somewhat strange situation where my client, seeking to develop this land, is facing, on the one hand, a desire by council to achieve medium density residential, as expressed in the zoning, but on the other hand, a set of rules that for the next 18 months, or for 18 months following the sale, only allow 700 square metre lot size subdivision. Anything else is non-compliant.
I think we can blame that on Parliament rather than the Council.
Until
one of the recent amendments to the Act, the rules would have had immediate effect, mm-hmm. albeit subject to submission, and would have had some weight, which would have assisted the client somewhat more than the effect of them not having any effect.
I said that, sir, but that, I think it was a couple of years ago.
I'm just pointing out that it's not the fault of the councils that your client has ended up in that situation.
If you ignored the decision to sell when that situation was in place, it might be
possible.
The fact is the council sold the land. and my client has had options of, and of course, as we're all aware, it's a hot market at the moment. One never knows how long the market's going to continue the way it's going at the moment. One always expects it to turn at some point in time. So no developer with a salt in the Queensland district at the moment, very few of them are sitting on their hands doing nothing. So facing the choice of, could just do 700 square metre lots, which is what the rules allow, as a right, of controlled activity, consent can't be refused. Alternatively, could have gone for a full MDR solution, but there are solutions challenging the zoning, so there's issues of notification. And as a consequence, Universal has, and Curley and Mr. Williamson, are at, virtually as we speak, in the process with council planning officers working their way through that, having pre-application meetings, talking about mix of lot sizes, MDR, LDR, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, and kind of literally at the moment working through a range of issues to prepare, as my submission state, and Mr. Williams can confirm, with a view to lodging a consent application, singular or plural, probably within the next month, for processing, and anticipating going on the market within the next month, and anticipating having consents processed and roads built and titles issued probably within the next 12 months before decisions on this plan are actually issued by the council. And then in the midst of all that, we had the Section 43 report, which in three areas is recommending a land use rule amendment, which would potentially affect the purchases of lots which are about to be marketed. And you can appreciate, Commissioners, the difficulty of going to the market and selling lots when you don't know what the rules will be to build on those lots in 12 months' time. So it's a complicated situation, and my client's working through it as best as my client can. And this presentation just responds to the concerns that have come out of that process. So just looking at my summary, 3.1 recorded that Universal's purchase Sphere Heights 5 months ago. Actually reported about the council position. 3.2, there were three recommendations in relation to Sphere Heights, which will impose an estimation of reasonable and inappropriate restrictions on development of the land. And they will, of course, assuming lots are created, and let's assume those recommendations were accepted, they would click in towards the end of next year and would affect people building houses on the lots that have been purchased. Dealing with those recommendations separately, one is the internal setback of what I've called the walkway reserve, which is that walkway you've walked along. Under the current LDR, 2.2 or 4.5 metres internal setback. The notified PDP had 1.5. The S23 report recommends 6. Universal opposes that for the reasons set out in my submissions, which I won't repeat. But in the spirit of what's being discussed, given that under the LDR purchases could have had a 2 or a 4.5, Universal is saying let's take a more conservative of those two. Heck with a 4.5 setback off that boundary. They're having to plan for that potential outcome and would have no difficulty with that. They query the justification for going from 4.5 to 6, and in my submissions I've submitted that there's been no analysis, evidence on the ground, cross-sections or anything else done to try and actually demonstrate whether that would have any beneficial effect. That then ties in with the second recommendation, which is the recommended 5.5 metre maximum restriction on land adjoining the eastern boundary. Universal opposes for the same reasons. And at this point, setting the hand up for it, I said, there's nothing in what I've read that tells them what the effect of all this is. Is there any way we can demonstrate to the commissioners what these differences might mean? So you have the long sections attached, D1 to D5. Six long sections running through the site, and each of them is a full long section showing the drop across the site, and then B4 and B5 are blown up eastern end cross sections, which show the council walkway 20 metres wide. They show a 1.75 m person standing on the walkway, and they show, alternatively, assuming you built a house was built on the bound, on the rear setback to the maximum height, which is kind of unusual, because usually the maximum height gets hit with a ridge. But assuming that was the case, there's one scenario of the council's recommended 5.5 metre maximum height and 6 metre setback. Universal's preferred 7 metre maximum height and 4.5 metre setback. My ruler and black pen with the two sight lines, merely to indicate what, and I actually came over on Monday to walk that walkway just to be familiar with it, what I suspect the outcome probably would be in the difference between the two. And you see there's one cross section which is B, where the ground is quite steep, where the differences probably have an effect. There's the other five, the wolf is looking upwards under either scenario. So really that's what the Universal's point is, and just putting this in front of the commission for the commission to make a decision. Does the extra 1.5 really make a difference on the setback? Does the extra 1.5 metres on height really make that much of a difference? I outlined in my submissions different aspects right in that walkway which you would experience when we get between the houses. There are a couple of really good viewpoints. There's a Kurumoka walkway across the road, which if you just cross the road and walk up, you've got a very expansive view from the walkway. Probably not much more to say about those, commissioners. They are, to be honest, in terms of what's been submitted yesterday, the lesser of the concerns. The third one's the main one. But we need you to consider those points and to consider Universal's position and question whether the justification is there for the, shall we say, more onerous restrictions recommended in the S42A report. Probably the most significant one is the 400 M2 site density maximum lot size situation. And again, we have the situation where Universal sits here today, literally planning a subdivision. Doesn't know what the rules will be in a year's time or what purchases will be subject to. I've outlined in my submission some of the bizarre consequences that could arise if sections are made now that are between 400 and 800 square metres, if there was a range, which is what's been discussed. It is a strange outcome, including one that will get size between 400 and 499, but I don't think you're allowed to build a house. So there's some strange outcomes. I raised whether there was jurisdiction. I'm not pushing that too hard because it's kind of a funny, really, submission, that Valentine's submission. It just does seem to me that the particular recommendation of the S42A report has some difficulty flowing from that submission. It talks about 25 units to the hectare. It doesn't talk about maximum lot size of 400. Maybe there's jurisdiction there. We'd rather address this point on its merits. Possibly my primary submission point is the lack of S32 assessment by the council of the effect of that density plus maximum lot size. Given that different land has different characteristics, flat land is easier to develop than steep. There are a whole bunch of things flow from that, and the one that I've highlighted here, and which either of the people to my side can ask questions on if necessary, is the issue of stormwater. And it turns out that in the design for this development, probably the biggest constraint is stormwater, because it's a steepish slope. Aubrey Road has known stormwater problems. What surprises me, I have to say, is that, I don't have evidence, but I know Aubrey Road's got stormwater problems from active in Northlake. Mr. Williams knows stormwater road's got Aubrey Road's got stormwater problems. Mr. Curley knows Aubrey Road's got stormwater problems. It's a road at the bottom of a valley. The council has had past problems with stormwater, and it's a slight surprise that the infrastructural report on for this hearing on this land briefly says there's no wastewater problems and no potable water problems, and doesn't mention stormwater. But that's the one issue that is known to be a problem on Aubrey Road. So, massive change from permeable to impermeable, steepish site, it all goes downhill. You're required under the rules and the guidelines and the objectives and policies that stormwater coming off the site should not be more than it was pre-development. Council encourages low impact design solutions, which is swales and things. Finding a design that adequately deals with stormwater off that site is a challenge. And the challenge grows the more ditch you get. And there's economics involved. You can have solutions which are theoretically possible but cost a fortune and you didn't do them. And Mr. Williams has confirmed, will confirm his report that, for example, Valentine recommended 25 units per hectare is probably not achievable on the site because of stormwater. It's just too dense. So it's one thing to have a 25 per hectare type rule where you can have little ones and big ones, you can mix and match, you can have small ones and large ones. It's a different thing to have maximum 400, and try and achieve something to a maximum lot size. So where's the thinking behind that recommendation? In all of this, I'm actually ignoring the fact that by the time these rules come out, the site's probably going to be subdivided even too late anyway. So, but looking at the principles of it, has the board gone into the recommendation? Has the assessment gone into the recommendation? The Universal are quite happy, as they are at the moment, sitting there with council with a minimum 250, and max on site needs to be 250, and working with council to see what they can achieve on this site. And as I said in my evidence, Mr. Williams can confirm the plan's being worked on at the moment. 700 square metre lots, they have 350 square metre lots. And there are different iterations of this currently being worked on at the moment. But to then, for the council, to then have a recommendation for a maximum site density, sorry, minimum site density, maximum lot size 400, which clicks in a year's time under these circumstances, is somewhat unusual, and my submission is not justified in the SD to assess them and the council's evidence. That's all I wish to say, sir.
Any questions?
Sure. What is the objective of this process if the intent is to just get on and progress the subdivision consent in the meantime? What is it that we can do to assist a scenario which, as you say, by the time anything comes out of this, the subdivision is already granted?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I mean, it's an act. I start off by saying it's a very unusual situation.
Yes.
Why the land's been sold under these circumstances?
Yeah. Well, one option, and it's not said to be clever, you know me well enough to know that I'm not clever, could be that we just recommend to the council that they just withdraw the site from its proposed plan and you've got a live with low density zone as per the purchase and you get on with it with all the certainty, or your client gets on with it with all the certainty they want. That would seem to be the easiest way of getting something ASAP without having to worry about conclusion of this process or when things become operative?
I agree that's an option. Universal, I try and instruct me if I'm wrong on that, but Universal at the moment working with council to get some more lots. It's part of their planning, it's part of their economic calculations, and knew what the zoning was. So they're trying to achieve a certain outcome, and they're working as hard as they can with council to achieve a certain outcome, and I suspect they would be unhappy about that because despite the fact that they have some issues on non-compliant activity status, they're still going to try and go there. And they are in line with the council in trying to achieve that medium density outcome.
If I can just say, going back to your first question, I guess what this process enables is it certainly demonstrates a direction that the council would like plans to be developed, and certainly our intent to run with that direction, albeit we know specific site characteristics and constraints, and we're certainly heading in that direction. But we also need it to be workable with our site-specific response to this land, which we're quite informed on at this stage.
Okay. Thank you for that. Mr. Goldsmith, there's two scenarios, and I'm just going to ask you to confirm which, or both, is the right way to frame my mind before we talk to Mr. Williams. The first is that there's no basis in resource management generally or the proposed plan to try and justify protecting views from the walkway of your client's land. The other approach, one approach is there's no basis for it, but your client is nonetheless willing to be constructive and offer some form of setback to go some way towards addressing the concern as identified as a gesture of goodwill or whatever. The other approach is that there is a basis for some form of some protection of amenity values that might be enjoyed in the walkway, which could include some views, maybe not a continuous view, which might be a messier situation to try and find that balance. But which of those two would you feel characterises, well, that's your position?
My understanding of the case law, and I'll stand corrected if I'm wrong, is that the no basis is either applies to or is more usually applies to the private view, and the public view is different. We have objectives and policies in our plan that talk about protecting views from public views of visitors from public places. It has done for the last 20 years. So I'm not advancing an argument that from a public walkway that you are not entitled to take that into account.
Okay, so that's really helpful. So we are talking about what is the right balance, effectively. Okay, that's very helpful, Brian.
We are pushing for the 1.5 that was notified.
I guess the one that the view that the company has seen as well is obviously right now it would be a permitted activity to construct something 2 metres from that boundary to that maximum height. So I guess it's not so much just a new protection, but I guess you're a protection of what currently would be beyond a permitted fill-in. It's actually now looking to further capture more than what the current zone is.
I take your point there, and I understand it, but to be frank, you're also trying to benefit from an upzoning from low density to medium density. And so the argument of we'll take the extra zoning, but you can't take anything in terms of development of position beyond the low density zone is probably going to hit a wall before too long as we work through. That's just some frank feedback. It's got to be a...
The benefits are cost benefit analysis we can take on board.
I understand that, but... Yeah, no, I do understand that point of what the plan currently provides for. And lastly, Mr. Goldsmith, before we start asking questions you might object to, Mr. Williams, if the issue is striking the right balance, and there are some submissions talking about a 10-metre minimum setback, and there's the position that's been put forward in evidence about your client, are you comfortable that if the issue is finding that balance, we might have a conversation about options that have hitherto not been presented by your urban designer?
Certainly. Can't see how I'd legally have a problem with that, so as long as it was
okay. Okay,
thanks. No, I was always having a little bit of difficulty with this one. It's just the way it's evolved. Looking at it straight as a newly qualified commissioner under the terms of the RMA, I just have a little bit of trouble fitting it in, to be honest. And while I may have opinions, it's probably not going to be of much benefit to this conversation.
Okay. Well, best to hold on until we have you in the room by yourself. I've asked you my questions as if obviously a submission to the ultimate.
I just call Mr. Williams, has a page and a half that he wants to deal
So I've just noted there were a couple of questions coming out of the summary and some of the sleep, so I just thought it might be helpful if I provide a few thoughts around those, and that's effectively what this takes you through here. So the first question was just in terms of the walkway, and the question as to whether or not the submitter considered the retention of use could occur through imposition of development control for only a portion of the walkway. So just in my thoughts in terms of that, I note the discussion around that and then the voluntary loss of 4.5 metres setback. And also the additional cross-sections that have been provided to provide a bit more detail and context to the sort of potential the extent that those type of restrictions have been proposed at the moment would actually have any impact on the intended outcome there. But I think in terms of, if you look at where the walkway is on the start of point four, in my opinion, the natural place to focus on retaining views would be in the vicinity of where Makaraki Place joins the walkway and reserve, as this is a natural node junction in the walkway. There is also a natural desire line in this location where people at present cut through the submitted land from Makaraki Place to Smithdale Avenue. The reserve in this location effectively provides for a view shaft by virtue of the shape, which I believe is intended to signal a potential connection into the future street network. Therefore, taking this into account, in my view, it's not necessary to formalise any specific restriction, as the natural shape of the reserve will ensure this occurs anyway. So as far as considering particular location where views may be more valued and where the natural place to provide for that, I think that's in that junction, and the reserve, you'll notice, has that little dog leg in it there, which steps down towards the site. I think that will naturally inform the design of the site and therefore open up views to ensure that there is some view provided. And then the second question was just regarding an alternative to the minimum density and maximum lot size. This is paragraph 6. I still maintain the view that the subdivision process and objectives and policies as highlighted in my evidence provide appropriate guidance to encourage and or require lot sizes and densities commensurate to the anticipated in a medium density environment. However, as noted in the legal submission, the method commonly used to manage density is a dwelling per hectare control, either net or gross, typically with the range factors into control. This approach ensures an overall density aligned with that anticipated for the zoning is achieved, whilst providing flexibility to allow site constraints and other factors to be taken into account. I note in this respect, Shotover Country, North Lake and Plan Change 44 all adopt density controls based on a dwelling per hectare ratio. In my view, if a density provision is to be imposed, adopting a density per hectare control would be my preferred approach. However, the appropriate density needs to relate to the development capacity of the particular site. That assessment hasn't been carried out, but it is unlikely that the 25 dwellings per hectare is reasonably achievable. And then the final query or note was just a regard to the policy and rule relating to garages. And the question about whether or not the policy should include design, and then just a paragraph 10 there. Given the design of garages can influence its impact on the street, I would support adding design into the reworded policy as drafted in my evidence. A suggested amendment is detailed below. And there I've just underlined where I thought you could add in design to that policy as suggested by.
Thanks, Mr. Williams. We might as well start at the end and move backwards. So we spoke previously today with your colleague, Mr. Graves, about that garage policy, so we've already had some discussion on it. So it's only fair if I put the same questions to you. One of the questions was, we talked about the circumstances where effectively some degree of dominance by way of garages could be a good thing, and we talked about like a service lane or a rear lane that's designed to be a garage scape. And so the question was, if in the medium density zone a likely built form outcome is, and I don't know that it is, that's for you to tell me, but if a likely manifestation of the medium density zone is going to be houses that have service lanes or rear lanes or garages. Would it not be better, instead of just watering the policy down, to just say service lanes are excluded, or give explicit recognition somehow to the fact that there might be some forms of roads that are actually intended to be called garages?
I support in this respect, support Ms. suggestion around guidelines. I think they're going to be critical and ideally should have been prepared as part of the package for the medium density zoning, particularly as we've moved away or the council's chosen to move away from assessment matters. I think what you're suggesting there would be a perfect example of what would have previously been an assessment matter to help guide a scenario when the lane may be appropriate. And again, I think the guideline would be another great opportunity to provide for that.
So, if we find ourselves in a position, having heard all the evidence, that we're of the view that guidelines are critical, and there are no guidelines, then we find ourselves unable to advise the council to support its own plan, and that might delay the process, including your client substantially. When we spoke to Mr. Falconer, he clarified his view that they were more in the field of nice-to-haves, not must-haves, conveniently allowing the plan to proceed, were we supportive of it. But that's just for your information. What I'm going to ask you is, as I read the proposed plan, although there's been an attempt to simplify it by removing assessment matters, I don't think there's any objectionable policy that says the plan should not have them. And there are some circumstances where some more specific guidance would be beneficial. And it's a question as much to you, I think, Mr. Goldsmith. Is there scope within this submission or other submissions to add those surgical bits of guidance to the plan? Well, the question is, if there was some, having heard what everyone says, we feel that effectively there could be some instances where assessment criteria of two or three bullet points here or there might give everyone the certainty they're saying they want. Do you think that there's scope in the submission or submissions that you've seen that we could do that as an alternative to saying it has to be some massive separate guideline process? Who knows how long that would be or what would be in it?
I can't put any specific submissions, but as Sharon will know, I've always argued very strongly in favour of a wide interpretation of submissions, and that you ask for something, if there's a consequential amendment or something similar or something slightly different, it gets you where that submission sort of wants to go. I've always been of the view that the RMA is to be interpreted purposively as far as it possibly can.
Okay. All right, thank you for that. And then back to you, Ms. Williams, on that point then. So if there was a way to give more specificity around things like if it's a service lane, then garages right along, built to the edge of it, is probably fine. That sort of thing, would that be something you'd support?
Yeah, well, actually, I was more thinking your suggestion would have been within the context of the policy.
It could be within the policy, so, yeah.
But no, I think what you probably were meaning was just simply add that exemption to the rule.
Well, let's forget where it sits. Let's just for now focus on what it be.
Well, I just think, to simply, we're talking about carriages and a lane, it's such a small issue. I think it's be so much tidier to find a solution within the framework that we're working with rather than create a whole new one.
That's very helpful with that answer. It's 20 years, as I've got to Mr. Green's just in the universal development, the primary school site. The same situation on Tenney Street, where the garages are close to the road and probably not achieving the policy. And that's not a service lane.
No, that's right. So in that situation, the duplex units wouldn't meet the proposed rule as I'll propose it.
Mm.
All the others in that row are either in line or behind the zone, so it's just the duplexes. That's right, they would, under this rule, if that land was zoned medium density, would need resource consent.
The question is whether the proposed policy then is flexible enough that on resource consent those options are still available.
Yes, well, of course, I think that it's not, it doesn't say avoid, which I suggest needs to be removed, so that I think the way I've intended the word policy to be worded is you need to make a balancing decision of whether or not that particular, in that particular case, granting that infringement is appropriate, and therefore that's where the managing the potential effect comes into the equation of how you look at it. It's not absolute, it's just a breach. Those three, the four duplexes would have reached the rule, you would then make an assessment. Well, probably, I hope, planner would look at the context of the fact that there's not a big row of garages there already, so what's the effect of one or two of them coming forward? Probably no effect, because I think you probably look at that streetscape and think it's pretty good.
Question put to Mr. Groves about the proposed wording. The alternative wording, as in what
you're putting,
was whether or not it possibly went too far the other way in terms of, while it says manage the potential for garages to dominate, it doesn't give you any plan user guidance on what the purpose of the management is. So is it actually something that should be limited, or is it, should we be maximising the potential for garages to dominate, for instance? So I'm trying to extract the technical bias of, on a daily basis, managing, trying to limit garages, but policy doesn't actually say that, it just says manage the potential.
Well, that,
to dominate.
The negative effect you're trying to manage is the dominance of garages on the streets, okay?
But that doesn't say, that just says manage the potential for dominance. It doesn't say manage to limit the adverse effects of, it just says manage. So, a plan user, you move to Australia, I move to Australia, we all go somewhere else. All new people come out of university with no background, they read this and say, so what is it I'm actually being asked to do? And so the question is there an augmentation to the policy you've proposed that might still give greater clarity as to what the plan user should be trying to achieve, that might still not be as rigid as the policy you'd like to see removed that starts with the word avoid?
I guess I don't quite follow what you're saying, but there's always probably a refinement of the way it's worded, but the starting point is the way the rule is worded is giving you a direction that the issue is when the garage is bought of the dwelling, as I've suggested, and therefore for the policy to kick in, you'd be in a context of a planner looking at a garage that is proposed forward of the dwelling, and therefore they would then look at the policy and look to see whether or not the garage is dominating the streetscape in that context by virtue of how far forward it is of the dwelling.
Yeah. Okay, so I understand.
And they may tick it because it is.
Tick it.
They may say, tick, it is dominating, so we've managed that. But manage also means achieve.
I see.
Let's move on.
Yep, sure.
Good. As I've read through the proposed plan and the 42 reports and the submissions on this issue of density limits and site sizes, one of the key things I've taken away from it is that the minimum site, well, the site size rule effectively is the fee simple greenfield subdivision of sections. And the density control in the land use sections is more about resource consents, which once obtained, there's an exclusion in the subdivision section that says the site area rules don't apply, you just subdivide around your resource consent. Is that how you understood or approached it?
Traditionally, yes.
So, in the context of your client who may or may not at this point have a clear sense of the product they want to achieve, whether it's fee simple sections or comprehensive housing, I guess my question is, if you know which one of the two you care about, does it actually matter if one of them doesn't really sit well if you're going to ignore it anyway?
Yeah, the difference is that you've introduced a minimum in the land use provision. That's the critical difference. You've effectively, as Scott has pointed out in his submission, created a situation where if you create a lot that is larger than 400 square metres, it will trigger when someone comes to build their house, they will be in breach of that land use provision because it's a minimum. So the current provision is around a max, so you don't end up in the same situation.
So you're telling me if the subdivision comes in and the lot gets created at 370 square metres, that lot gets sold, then someone can't put a house on it?
No, that's okay. It's under. So the situation arises at the moment because you're in a... If these rules are in play, you couldn't get into that scenario because you would have either, if you applied for subdivision and tried to create a lot bigger than 400 as proposed in the 642 area, well, they'd be not quite to it. So every lot has to be no larger than 400 square metres as recommended in the 642 area, and therefore that flows into a land use control that ties together. The problem is at the moment is that we're in a situation where we can create lots, or actually not allowed to create lots, that's small. Those lots, if they are created in accordance with the current offer provisions, i.e. up to over 700, they would be caught by this land use rule in the future.
Unless, as I'm sure any expert of your experience would advise your client, the subdivision included consent notices on those titles.
Well, it's a bit more complicated than that. We've been scrambling to work through that whole process at the moment. A consent notice to do what? Because if it's just simply saying that unless you have a consent, which you don't need at the moment, you're permitted to put a house on a low density lot at the moment, so you don't need a consent.
Then the alternative would be in the subdivision consent to explicitly seek land use consent to authorise a building platform, even if it's a permitted activity now, but explicitly get consent for that on each section as part of the subdivision. But
if you can find a land use rule to trigger, yes. But you wouldn't necessarily on the basis of a trigger rule, because a house in the low density zone, operative zone at the moment, is permitted within bulk and location controls.
And you don't think you could seek certificates of compliance issued at the time of subdivision? So
you could.
Turning to the question of the walkway.
So, well, my experience has been to protect a view from point A over land B, you can limit height to look over the top of something, or you can limit width to regulate gaps to provide some continuity, or you can do both. And it seems like the methods proposed in the 42A report are substantially about limiting height. And you haven't suggested anything markedly different other than a different combination of setbacks to ameliorate the additional height or the typically fit height. Is that fair?
Well, other than in the summary I've just pointed out, that there's actually a view shaft that can actually be created where I think is probably the most logical place to have views, due to the nature of the shape of the reserve.
But that's also, isn't it, one of the relatively lower points is the landform undulate, doesn't it? Sort of, well, it certainly goes up one direction from that point. So, anyway, what I was going to suggest was have you considered the method of a percentage of, maybe no setback, permitted height, but a percentage of that width that can be built to regulate the gaps, given that in light of the undulation, there'll be some points just so high, you'll be looking over the top anyway.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether...
Well, that's why I don't support having a control, because I think you'll get enough natural variation anyway, as I pointed out, between the virtual setbacks, between lots, the roof variation you'll naturally get with different architectural designs and responses. The fact that it's a very unusual situation if you simply walk along there now, that not every house is built to 7 metres very close to the walkway. In fact, probably very few have, just because they naturally don't necessarily all build two-storey houses. So that
we did walk along this walk.
Yeah. So you'll see that the likelihood of a scenario of getting a wall of development where you completely remove views from that walkway is just fanciful. It's not a reality. And therefore I think it's probably just going too far and a little bit excessive to then impose these provisions when this doesn't seem to me, given you know, we've done a bit of analysis, this doesn't seem justified or necessary.
So in terms of your consideration of methods, effectively what I'm hearing you say, and it's not criticism in any way, is that the lack of problematic effect or justification has effectively limited what could have been a consideration of should a height to boundary plane apply, which could achieve the same thing as a management of height and setbacks or...
Well, I think, and I'm not saying that there isn't a situation where that may be justified, I'm just saying in the particular context of this scenario, which is what we're dealing with a site-specific rule that's going to apply to this reserve only, you need to look at the site-specific attributes, and you don't have a flat scenario.
Yeah, no,
in a flat scenario, you might get a wall, but you're just not going to have that. It's very, you know, along its alignment.
Based on what you've told us, talking to us just now, and what I experienced on our site visit today, almost undulating carry, it would seem that the most effective method would be something like just accepting that whatever you do is going to need resource consent anyway, because you're looking at something large. Is just to put a restricted discretionary requirement on that site that just talks about some solution, whatever the words are, to some relationship of views being achieved that allows the detail to be worked through rather than a very crude rule. But I don't see that working because we're hearing that it's probably going to have a subdivision in place by the time that we've got something out anyway.
That's right, but the problem is the rule proposed, if it goes through now, is a land use rule that will be imposed upon every future lot owner, regardless of whether or not the title is issued before these rules become operative.
So I'm talking to you now about alternatives to that, and one could be a subdivision restriction of discretion to figure out how the lots should be shaped and sized and where building platforms would go to give some certainty of what that would be, as one idea. Taking into account all those sensitivities and peculiarities you talked about.
Yeah, that's right. It is all a bit of a moving piece, but if you look at the proposed structure for the subdivision chapter, and I do highlight some of the existing policies, I believe the council's intention is to add a lot more, particularly in medium density zones, discretion around subdivision design, which I think would allow that to naturally be provided for anyway.
Turning then to the council's proposed height limit of 5.5, is it your understanding that that would apply to the whole site?
Along the reserve boundary.
Just along the reserve boundary.
Within 15 metres.
It is within 15 metres of the government.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you go to the 7.
Yeah. So I understand it to mean that you run along the boundary, you come in at 15 metres, 5.5, and then you'd be able to step up to the permitted height at 7 at that point.
But in reality, that 15 metres is probably going to take out the front row of properties.
Well, I would think so, but I'm not sure what council's done to assess that decision on 15 metres.
Yeah, no, Mr. Goldson also made the same point about the step up. Do you understand that? And the cross sections, by the way, agree up. So where we get to after that discussion is that there's an acceptance that there's some legitimacy to the idea of at least some of those views being retained in some form. But the methods you've proposed, which is just the 4.5 metre setback, in conjunction with all the other requirements of subdivision, will be sufficient too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the natural, you just need to look at how development in that area has evolved, even though we're talking medium density versus low density. You just naturally get gaps, you'll get natural variation. But that with the topography that you would have experienced when you walked there, that you can be confident and you can see from the cross sections, you're going to get views, absolutely.
On our site visit this morning, there were a couple of dwellings that had been built quite close to the walkway. Not in a way that impeded the view, certainly not from one of them substantially. But the effect of the solid boundary fence, which didn't block the view, struck me as something that was very eye-catching. Is that the kind of design, Matt, that you'd also think would be part of that solution? Or?
Yeah, no, I definitely think you'd want to try and think about how you deal with your boundary treatment. I mean, that's something we're already looking at within the design itself.
Okay, well, thanks, Mr. Williams.
I've got a few thoughts on the same matter, and I'm just wondering if you could help with your opinion as to whether, in fact, the standard 4.5 metre setback along that boundary, which is essentially the east, I mean the eastern boundary of most of those sites, there might be one or two which the southern that 4.5 metre boundary may be their largest area of outdoor space. Does that like to encourage those sort of close border fences to give them privacy?
I think naturally it would be the tension you're managing with no control, that's the natural thing people want to do is put up the fence. Particularly again the challenge is the walkway and places is elevated, so you're gonna feel exposed no matter what. I think the reality is you just need to probably accept a painted fence is not a nice design response, and even hedging to soften it would be a nicer approach than dealing with the fence. In most of the places isn't actually going to stop someone seeing it, but it's just that sort of natural thing you want to put up a boundary.
The other alternative option that occurred to me, and I wonder if you'd like to consider it and give your view as to whether it would be a sensible approach there, would be to apply the recession pane rule along that boundary, the eastern boundary rule, which is 2.5 metres plus D, I think it's 2.5 metres plus 45 degrees. So you at 4.5 metres you'd have a 7 metre height limit. Would that have any assistance in protecting the views? It would enable, of course, people to come closer than 4.5 metres.
I probably not looking at the cross section. I haven't worked it out, but I don't think it'd be 7 metres. 4.5 metres from the boundary. What's the?
No, the ground level could come closer.
The rule, no. The point is, I'm saying not have the 4.5 metre setback.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
2.5 metres plus D, which is the eastern boundary recession, which essentially says at 4.5 metres you get 7 metres.
So that, like,
Have you considered that as an option too? Because that would would encourage people to have thick roofs rather than solid walls, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, and it also adds a little bit more flexibility to come closer to the yeah. I mean, I hadn't thought about it until you raised it, but that's right. I think that would be a more effective way of allowing some flexibility.
Is there any way that you could assist us with drawing on your diagrams that you provided to us, what, or of the similar diagrams, what that rule would do?
Yeah, definitely. We could,
you'd be taking it, the 2.5 metres would be from
the boundary.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, we just add on to those existing cross sections, come up to 2.5 and then at 45, and show where it hits the 2 metres in relation to anything you can see.
Yes. That would be very helpful if you could do that and provide that.
Yes, we can spot on all of the cross sections that were attached to the transmission.
Yeah. Well, yes, that would be useful. Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Yes.
No, not the thing that you've been asked.
No. Yes, Mr. Goldsmith.
I think one more point before you finish, sir, if I could.
That's pretty much my question.
Yes. I just thought of a slightly different answer to the public-private
viewpoint issue, which you raised before, which appears to me is probably quite important in this circumstance. And the difference is illustrated by the fact, now, I didn't go through my submissions, but there are three submitters on this point. You may have noticed that Mr. and Mrs. Richards addresses Matariki Lane, so they own one of the houses looking that way. And in fact, Mr. Kirby confirmed the approach my client to see if they can buy the land in front to preserve their view. And the third submitter is involved in an accommodation business which has a house listed in Matariki Place. But the point is that the public view is a movable view. The public view is walking along gap between the house, Matariki Place gap between the house, around that right angle bend where you look north. So the public view is that kind of view, and that's the one I'm acknowledging has validity. That's different from the private view of the person in the house over here. You just get that view, and might not just submission worded as a public submission, which is actually worrying about their private view.
No, look, I think that's exactly what I understood from your first answer, right?
We understand that. I think it's only fair to tell you that if I walk into town, I walk along that track. But I don't walk along the one behind Coromico because it doesn't go anywhere.
Not yet.
Not before. I've harvested the forest in 32 years.
It looks like it.
No, thank you. That's been very helpful. In terms of those diagrams, we are not, after today, we're not sitting again until Tuesday week, so if you could get them to the council the next week, it would be very useful. Thank you. Not seriously expecting to read through all this in 10 minutes, I think.
Not at all. This will be the selected edited highlights.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Duncan White. I'm the planner from Patterson Fitz Partners in Wanaka. I'm providing evidence this afternoon on behalf of two submitters. Firstly, on behalf of submitter 812 on Land and Infrastructure Management Limited. With me this afternoon is Alistair Sive. Immediately after that, I'll present evidence on behalf of John Coe and six further submitters from Gold Coast Road.
Right.
Both of those issues are in relation to minimum lot size in the livestock zone.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
The submission from Land and Infrastructure Management supported the notified extent of the livestock residential zone and general security proposed rules. The submission sought a refinement of the proposed rules within Chapter 11 to achieve minimum lot size of 2,000 square metres in low visibility locations, a lot size average greater than 3,000 square metres within any one application of subdivision consent, a 4,000 square metre minimum lot size for locations that are highly visible from public places, a minimum dimension of 20 by 20 metres where lots are between 2,000 and 4,000 square metres, and that those provisions would apply to sites greater than 1 hectare at the time of the application of the proposed district plan. The Section 42A recommendation to amend the minimum lot size and defined locations within the large lot residential zone from 4,000 square metres to 2,000 square metres is supported, specifically the recommendations to allow a density of 2,000 square metres along the north side of Aubrey Road and south of Aubrey Road are supported. Land and infrastructure management submission sought that subdivision on these visible locations of the submitters land at 507 Aubrey Road, amongst other locations, be provided for a minimum lot size of 2,000 square metres. The submission sought that 461, 475 and 485 Aubrey Road, as well as its own site at 507 Aubrey Road, have the ability to be developed in accordance with the submission points discussed previously. These sites have not been discussed in greater detail in the Section 42A report. These sites, Mr. in the context, are shown on the plan and aerial photograph in Appendix A. And to talk you through that here, that's this plan here. Sorry, that's the right one. To help you get your orientation.
So you're essentially saying that up to the edge of lot 7 on that plan should be 2,000 square metres.
It should be a mixture of about 2,000 square metres and 4,000 square metres in the more sensitive areas.
Right. Why did you not go further east where it's already much more, much denser than 4,000 to as far as where the plant center is?
We've got this a clear differentiation between, you've got the existing 4,000 square metre sites in here, and then you've got these four larger lots which do provide scope for smaller, more dense development without the constraints that you get with small sites.
But what about the ones further immediately to the east,
mm-hmm.
as far as the plant centre, which are already quite intensely
okay, that's a point that we do come up quite again, because as you raise, there is a couple of other subdivisions in there that are already at that density or higher. Do you need me to explain where the site sits, or the Commissioner's happy about where we're
visited all of the large lot areas this morning, and I think my fellow Commissioners are familiar with where those sites are, having done that site visit.
Okay. Also on the next page is an aerial photograph of the same plan to help you get an idea of the lot sizes and the position of some of the buildings that might provide a bit of an issue for more intense information in some of those areas. One thing to note on that plan is the differentiation, the colour differentiation between the rural and the low density residential has not come out terribly well on the colour photocopy. So
it's the end of the I forgot what street that is, of Mount Island Drive is I know something else.
Yes. He sure will come to me too.
But yes, the blue line is the zone now.
Yes, that's correct, yes. And you can see the transition between the smaller lots and the larger rural. The Section 42A report considers that 461 Aubrey Road, which is lot 5, DP 12562, would be suitable for a reduced lot size of 2,000 square metres. as it joins the proposed load into the residential zone to the south. So that site there,
yes.
And load into the south. But does not recommend it for the reduced lot sizes. The site is subject to a QE3 covenant. If the site is considered suitable for a density of 2,000 square metres, I consider it should be provided with that ability. Whether this ability can be implemented as a result of the covenant is a non-RMA constraint and is no different to the ability to subdivide the site into 4,000 square metres under the current rule. In fact, the presence of the covenant should not constrain appropriate zoning or development on adjacent sites.
Should another asking Bob on that paragraph, is there any reason why the covenant should affect how the zoning is placed in any event, in your view as a planner?
I don't think there is. I think the covenant is essentially a private matter between the landowner and the QE2 trust. So that is more a site management issue rather than a resource management issue. The sites next door at 475 and 485 will be right, so this is lot 2 and 1, DP311288. That's those two sites there. Yes. Share many of the same characteristics as the site 461 Aubrey Road, in that limited areas of the site are visible from the road, and that is as a result of the existing bank that rises from close to the road and obscures the views into the site from the road. The service and urban design reasons covered in the Mr. Glaston and Mr. Falconer, I concur with, and for that basis, think that the majority of those sites could also be developed to a density of 1 house per 2,000 square metres. The more elevated southern portion of 485 Ruby Road could, in accordance with the submission of that and infrastructure management, be developed at 1 house per 4,000 square metres as currently. That is because, look at the little photo, as well as the bank along the road, the site rises quite steeply from that tree line. Mm-hmm. And you've also got Mount Iron and the rural zoning out the back. So that 4,000 square metre transition is the same provided for under the current rural residential zoning. Site at 507 Aubrey Road has many of the same characteristics. The site has a recent subdivision consent for which works have been completed and title is about to issue. The subdivision provides 2 4,000 square metre sites along Aubrey Road and a further 4,300 square metre site at the base of the slope. There's two lots of that subdivision provided for two lots, one at 1.1 hectare and one at 1.7 hectares. That have been retained in the ownership of land and infrastructure management. This enables the outcomes sought in the submission of retaining 4,000 square metre lots adjacent to the road and other visible locations, and providing the 2,000 square metre lots in locations that are less visible. Mr. Seidel will provide some further detail on the development of that site at the conclusion of this evidence. In addition to being consistent with the development 507 Aubrey Road, Land and Information Management submission is consistent with development on surrounding sites. In Appendix B is a resource consent for the subdivision of the site at 539 Aubrey Road, and 539 is the site to the east of the submitted site at 507. Interestingly, this consent was granted in February of this year and authorised the subdivision to two lots, one of which was 2,700 square metres, and so less than 4,000 square metres provided for under the current low density, current rural residential zoning, and the other one of 6,400 square metres. Also note that 533 Aubrey Road, which is lot 5, PP303293, so that's this one here, has got both a house and a residential flat on it. So this is that point that you made earlier about there being a density, a greater density of development or perceived density of development further along in that area. Then the final point to note here is that the submission from Land and Infrastructure Management recommends retaining the current 4,000 square metre lot size along the more elevated southern boundaries of both 485 and 507 Aubrey Road, and as the transition into the rural zone to the south, that remains as it is at the moment. That's all I
have to. Are you familiar with the lot sizes and hidden hills?
I am.
Could you give us an idea? The ones along Aubrey Road, between Aubrey Road and that wind.
One is you just go with the council's 2,000 square metre subzone. The other, in terms of the submission about the 2,000 minimum, 4,000 where it's more sensitive, 3,000 average, you really need to give us the rule that would implement that. I don't think we're in a position, if we agree with you, that we could make up that rule and whatever activity status might apply and how you figure out what's more sensitive or less sensitive. So, I would invite you, if you want to pursue that, you need to give us what the law would be, and we can assess it on that basis.
Thank you. I'll discuss that with the client and come back to this.
And that's not to indicate any way what we might do. It's just, I'm just letting you know, I think even if we agree with it at this point, we'd probably fall over not having enough information on how the law would work or what it would be.
Yes, fair enough. Thank you.
But not really a question.
Questions about this? That's pretty logical.
Right, now my name's Alistair Sive. I've had, just for the record, I've put on the first page of my evidence a background of 45 years at land based consultancy, mainly based in Wellington and also in North Borneo. Going straight to point number three. Currently I'm running a number of small housing and rural projects as an investor or professional trustee located between central North Island, Greater Wellington and Queenstown Lakes. I currently reside 50-50 between Wellington and Wanaka, and while in Wanaka I reside on the site, the subject site being discussed today. On this occasion I'm speaking as a landowner of the subject site. In a resident there. I note the minute issued by the chairman stating that all written submissions are to be taken as read, so I will say no further things on the submission other than referring to odd points. On occasion, planning matters have already been covered by Duncan White. Expanding further on paragraph 3.10 of Mr. White's evidence of work carried out under the existing RM 160157. reading from point six. At RM160157, we've completed earthworks from the rear of the site to Aubrey Road frontage. Three new lots have been created, lots 1, 2, 3, with the balance lots 4 and 5 held by Lynn for further development. Now these lots are amalgamated as one, so that is the entry if we're going to talk about averages or anything. We've kept all the options open. Also in paragraph 6, council issued a 224 certificate, 224C RMA certificate for the subdivision 2 days ago, the 10th of October. It's right up this week, 10th of October 2016. The plan LT499443 is attached over 2 or 3 pages there. All work carried out under the RM160157 is entirely consistent with the submission number 812. In other words, we've cut out the three lots and we have left the other land under consideration for further development and any decisions that come out of the district plan processes. Now, further to that, at point number 7, the land covenant on lots 1, 2 and 3. These three lots have been sold subject to restrictive covenant attached. Significant items in this document include no further objections to any planning matters whatsoever. Now, the document is here that is to be lodged as part of the deposit of the plan, and they are robust covenants. So effectively, the three purchasers have contractually agreed to negate any further planning matters. Lim can elect to also legalise the private way, or the right of way A and B on that same plan which is attached, as road without involvement of lots 2 and 3 other than signing of documents. So once again, we have kept it, all options open for discussion or whatever way any decisions come out of this planning process. Adjoining owners to the west and the south, that's on lot 1, DP331, 288, that's number 485, and to the south, which is lot 1, 26209, plus the area coloured yellow, have all agreed in writing to our submission, and that evidence is attached to our submission. Both these owners at point 8, both these owners have given written consent to proposals presented today and are attached in submission 812. Now turning now to point number 9, adjoining owners to the east, which we've discussed, lot 1, DP303293, and lot 5, 303. The house for lot 1, the houses, plural, on lot 1, DP303283, are both located close to the Aubrey Road frontage, adjacent to the 0.8 hectare lot 1 on the subdivision that we've just got consent to, 4C consent to. And the house on lot 5, that's the rear lot to the southeast, DP303293, is located adjacent to lot 5 on the latest subdivision. So in summary, both neighbours to the east are not adjacent to lot 4 on the latest plan. Now, at point 10, the reserve sensitivity issues that may have to be considered, the confined effect of paragraphs 6 to 9 above is that all reserve sensitivity issues have been removed by either written approval, contracted land covenants, or by the existing house locations. And then I've said that we've had assurances today that site visits are happening, but as stated in the original submission 812, the central and rear land of the latest plan cannot be viewed readily from Aubrey Road, accordingly respectively suggest a site visit is appropriate to view the matters raised here today.
Thank you. We will not do that today. If we do wish to go to site visit, it will be later on, it's not, I can't remember the date, so early November when we are doing our deliberations, but we will give advance warning to Mr. White if we want to do that.
No problem at all, thank you. One other very minor point.
We need to be careful because you may be doing works on the property.
No problem at all. One other, seeing the previous submitter talked about stormwater issues in Aubrey Road, I'm pleased to say that yesterday's storm and this morning's, one day after the 24C certificate has been issued, that all stormwater on this particular site was contained on site. I have the photographs here, which I'll date and submit.
We saw it this morning.
And notwithstanding there's a stormwater problem across the road at North Lake, which you've no doubt seen too.
That's a dodge.
So that matter is that the design was very minor on-site retention and to design stormwater systems coped adequately in yesterday's storm, notwithstanding there's a long history of flooding on Aubrey Road, which probably everybody here knows about. So there's that, and then just moving very quickly to the question made by the Commissioner Munro here, ask for a rule. As a pragmatic person, the topography at the rear of the site automatically generates larger lots physically in any design that you do. And the topography in the middle of the site, we're talking about lot 4, is flat. So if we settle for a minimum, if you're asking for a rule, 2,000 square metres, it would result in the flat land going to 2,000 square metre minimum and the rear, more undulating land, be a larger figure, which is more likely to be the 3,000 plus, and with our amalgamation condition, it's in accordance with our general submission. So if we're wanting a rule, a very simple rule, and 2,000 minimum, which was actually hinted at in the zone and the subzone by cutting out.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is that your submission could be addressed by just extending the 2,000 metre subzone across those extra properties.
Right.
Which would be administratively the easiest thing for us to do, which takes away my headache of...
Well, we would extend that, obviously.
Yeah. But okay, I'm saying that
the net result would be what I've got in the submission because of the physical shape of the topography.
Okay.
You can go right up there and observe now, you can drive right up there, it's all earthworked and finished. Grass down. And a minor thing related to that is one of the, we've agreed also on that land transfer plan, there's a 10 metre setback for no building at the rear of the site, and that was agreed with the neighbour. And once again, the document for that to happen is submitted here as document number 6 in our evidence.
Why was this included in the first place when they redrew the map of the area?
But that's
councils.
Yeah, I know.
It's not for us to argue.
The question's not really addressed to you, is it?
We're here to work within the rules given to us.
Sure.
Which is what we've done.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Mr. White, I've read your evidence on behalf of Mr. Coe and the other people, and it's fully in support.
It is.
And I'm just prepared to say that it's tabled. I don't think we have any questions on that.
Thank you.
especially since we're running over time, so I think we still have just room for now.
I'm quite comfortable with that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I am Judy Rickman. I'm speaking on behalf of the submission that's made by the MRNZL Burnell Trust, of which I'm a trustee. We own a property at 6 McFarland Terrace, which adjoins a large piece of land, which is Lot 1, Deposited Plan 300273, which is basically just at the corner up here on the roundabout. I simply would like to, I don't have anything further to add in terms of written documentation to the submission. I simply wish to speak to the submission that we have made in terms of that process. So what I would like to provide is a little bit of background to the reason for our submission and some observations around why we believe it's reasonable for us to make that submission. So we purchased the property 3 years ago, and at that time we did, as you do when you purchase the property, fair and reasonable due diligence on understanding the background to the property, understanding the covenants that existed in relation to that property, and also understanding the potential environmental risks around that particular area. In terms of the property that we purchased, there was a covenant which at that time, subject to the existing district plan, had restrictions on what could be done within that piece of land. And we respect that in the world that we live in, there is a need for further subdivision and for work to be taken to create housing within the Wanaka community, because there are others like us who really enjoy this particular environment and wish to live here. However, this piece of land does have some complexity given its composition in terms of its, I guess you'd say, its physical attributes. It does have some quite big dips and undulations in it. And we have experienced with the subdivision that was done across the road a lot of work in respect of putting in soil, topsoil and so forth, and a lot of compacting work. So therefore, what the two things that we, I guess, essentially wish to raise are that on the basis that work is done on this piece of land to develop it further, we would ask that our position essentially is considered by having the opportunity to comment on potential developments and the impact that they may actually have on our, I guess you'd say, private amenities in terms of our use of land, which we purchased on the basis of existing rules and regulations. And the other point that I would raise is that we've learnt a lot over time in terms of the impact of climatic aspects, both through the Christchurch earthquake and the areas that were built on that possibly subsequently, if we had looked at more carefully, perhaps would have been built differently. And also the fact that this particular area is highlighted as a flood zone in terms of the composition of that, the area being identified to enable flooding waters to flow effectively away from the housings in that area as part of the original subdivision. So in summary, because I don't want to keep you and extend your day any longer, we asked that the subdivision and the proposed low density residential zone remain discretionary in view of the geophysical factors and risks affecting parts of the zone and the potential impact on adjoining properties for those factors and risks in the event of development. Further, we consider it necessary for council to give limited public notification to those adjoining properties so that we have an opportunity to voice our concerns and for council to hear those concerns so that if future potential claims come about as a consequence of development, council has the opportunity to consider those as part of the decision-making process. Accordingly, we ask that the proposed plan be altered to provide for this notification both in respect of restricted discretionary and discretionary activities. Thank you.
Now, let's clarify, because I might have missed what you said at the outset about where the property was. Is the large property that you will commit?
The large property adjoins our property. So this is the section.
That's the one on the corner of...
That's the corner, and our house is the one in the middle. So we adjoin that large piece of land.
Right, so that's on the north side of Old Station Road. Yep.
Thank you so much for your time.
In the hearing until